The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, we're going to start today with a song because I got my first vaccine. So everybody can sing along. You ready? All right, take it away. Midas Touch and Heather, I forgot her last name, but it's Heather. Here we go. All right, here we go. Oops.
Trump promoted the shots, not whine about getting credit. Like when he got his prick, no mention he was getting it. Please take this remedy, make COVID a memory. And when it's time, get vaccinated, please don't decline. Get your shot and we can get concerts and sports events. The summer could be so nice. Please just get your vaccine. So close to our dream, put an end to this quarantine. Really want an indoor time. And why? Definitely no surprise. Anti-vax are spreading lies. Damn it, why?
The administration would like you to take this vaccine. Joe Biden told you last week, if you don't, you can't celebrate the 4th of July.
With so much hesitation, we'll never get out of this mess. Screwing the nation, of course, it's the Republicans. Voters all said Biden, now thank God we've got Biden. And now, incidentally, skin cases have declined. Vaccine's a miracle from science. Need everyone's compliance. A shot or two will suffice. Just get your vaccine. We're so close to our dream. Put an end to this quarantine. Guarantee that you'll be fine.
He's a safe and effective product.
Oh, yeah. And we are, or I should say I am, just fine, that is. Well, as far as I know. Welcome to what day is today? Wednesday. Yeah, and I did get my second shot today. Right off the bat, I got to tell you, I spent a good hour on the phone with Microsoft this morning. After troubleshooting my sound problems, I know, sorry, I'm starting off another show with issues. But I got to tell you, because if you're listening and the audio level keeps dipping, it's because something is going on with my system. I spoke to the manufacturers of my board. It's not the board doing this. They did research, and it turns out other people have had this problem too, and it appears to be some kind of malware or virus. I ran malware bytes. I ran everything. Cleared out a whole bunch of shit that was on my computer, but it's still... And Microsoft, you know, remoted in and did some things this morning, and it's still, the volume is still dropping. So I apologize ahead of time if you notice dips in the volume. I will do my best to stay on top of it and keep riding those levels. Just one more thing to deal with today. I've dubbed today midweek mess because I had no idea what to expect. First of all, I did get my second Moderna vaccine today. There's my Band-Aid on my left arm. So my appointment time was like 12 noon. It's now 5 p.m. And the only thing I'm noticing at this point is just soreness in my arm. And I know last time, 4 weeks ago to the day, when I got the first shot, my arm hurt like a bitch for days. But that was the only side effect I had. This time, a lot of people are saying, watch out. The second Moderna shot is wicked. I had a friend say he was sick in bed for 36 hours. So I didn't know what to expect. And so today's show is a little bit of everything. There's a lot of stuff going on that we'll play with. The phone lines are open should you care to call in to talk about anything at all. 954-889-6410 is the number. Or you can Skype in to me at Nicole Sandler, all one word. And here's the thing. I don't know that they got rid of the malware, Lauren, because it still has the same issue. Lauren, and I'm talking to in the YouTube chat room, the same issue where my levels you know, I'm watching it go from, you know, 56 to 47. Now it's at 45, 44, 43, 42. Anyone have 41? It keeps going down. And now it's at 38. I'm going to pull it up again. So again, I apologize for any fluctuations in the thing. Gary in the YouTube chat room says, Nicole, it takes a full 2 weeks for it to take full effect. My second was the same as the first. Well, I know right now I'm now in a 2 week basically quarantine period. I've got it marked in my calendar. 2 weeks from today, April 7th, I can hug my kid. So that's what I'm counting down toward. All right. So, yeah. So, still watching the levels, keeping an eye on that until I get this thing fixed. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I may have to switch computers. I don't know. But I'll deal with it and hopefully keep the chatting about it to a minimum, because you don't need to deal with, you know, why my levels are fluctuating so much. I just want you to know if it's going up and down, that it's not you. it's not the vaccine having an effect on your head. It's my, you know, gremlins or whatever kind of things are taking this. Killer Sheep says, I've worked on my own PC since 2001. Have you opened yours up and blown out the dust? Not to be offensive or rude. No, I haven't. But I do have a little sprayer thing, so I will try that. I'll try anything. If anybody has an idea, bring it, because I'm at a loss now. I need to call Microsoft back, and I know how that's going to go. All right, so on to other things. So I got the vaccine. I'm now in sort of a waiting period to see if I react or not. Hopefully not, because I'd like to be able to finish out the week with you guys. So we got that. Okay, let me pull up my little list of things that's going on. Well, I know. Here's one thing that I wanted to deal with. Israel had presidential elections again. Yes, well, not presidential elections. They have their elections. And the system over there is weird, because it's not, well, it's weird here too. Let me just say that up front, because the person who gets the most votes doesn't necessarily win, as we saw in 2016 and in 2000 and 2004. And, you know, it goes on because we have the stupid Electoral College. But this time I'm talking about Israel. Let me just read to you a little bit from the Washington Post, because it's hard for me to explain what went on there. But here's the bottom line. Netanyahu may have gotten the most votes, but he didn't get enough to form a government. So the Washington Post reports, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's party won the most parliamentary seats in Israel's election Tuesday, according to the exit polls, putting him in within sight of securing a governing coalition and extending his tenure as the country's longest serving leader. Got to bring volume up again. Netanyahu's Likud party far outpolled its main challengers, but, and here's the important part, but still fell well short of a parliamentary majority. And the exit poll results, which continued to shift in the wee hours of Wednesday, suggested that a majority might remain out of reach. The exit poll results show that Israeli politics remains stalemated by a profound divide. Three previous elections in the past 2 years each failed to produce a functional government, and lawmakers again face a period of intense horse trading as pro and anti-Netanyahu forces try to cobble together a majority in the 120-seat parliament that's known as the Knesset. So that's where we are. So now this happened. Let me bring up, where is it? Okay. It was September 18th, 2019. God, I thought it was more recent than that, but I guess it was that long ago that Israel went to the polls. And again, it looked like Bibi Netanyahu was out, because the same thing, his party got a majority of the votes, but not enough to form a government. So he had to form a coalition with someone else. So I got all excited and I'm thinking, wow, all right, at this point, we're still dealing with Trump. We had another year of Trump to deal with. And all I could think is, at least we can get Netanyahu out in Israel, right? Oh, and David's calling now. So hi, David, what did I get wrong now? Hello?
You didn't get anything wrong.
Okay.
I wanted to call in with a heartfelt fuck you very much for Shannon Pettypiece of MSDN.
Yeah, I saw that.
To a question about gun control and voting rights, said that the Biden administration was not going to be pushing hard on those far left issues.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Gun control is not a far left
issue. And voting rights? Voting rights?
The Constitution specifically states that we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as long as these maniacs have access to killing machines, we are not able to live our lives, and we are not able to enjoy domestic tranquility. And as to voting rights, again,
not
very
far
much
left,
Ms. Pettypiece.
That's right.
Because if we can't vote, then nothing is going to happen. Nothing. We're going to be stuck with this asshole fucking...
Yes. Tell us how you really feel, David.
That we have,
yes.
Including the goddamn filibuster. Thank you very much, Joe Manchin, Kirsten Sinema, and all the rest of you shit stains. And nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen.
Okay.
So.
All right. I agree with you.
Thank you very much, Shannon Pettypiece.
There you go. All right. Thank you, David. Bye.
Love you madly.
Love you too. All right. That was my husband. And yes, I actually wasn't even going to do that story because it's, you know, it's what some reporter on one cable channel said. But this is one of MSNBC's White House reporters, Shannon Pettypiece, who referred to voting rights and gun control as, quote, far left issues. So as he said, fuck you very much. All right. Back to what I was talking about. It was September 18th. Of 2019, the last time Israel went to the polls, and it looked like Netanyahu lost, and I got excited, and so I decided to call Israel. Now, I do this from time to time. I've done it over the years. I did it, you know, 10 years ago during when the Arab Spring started and Tahrir Square was overrun with protesters. I called a hotel overlooking Tahrir Square. And the reason I call hotels in other countries is because you're more likely to get somebody who speaks English. So, you know, there's a method to my madness sometimes. So on September 18th, 2019, after Israel went to the polls and it looked like Netanyahu was out, I had a little premature celebration. So I called and I pulled up on TripAdvisor, Tel Aviv, because it's a lovely tourist city. And I called the top-rated hotel, which happened to be the Vera Hotel. Just so to give you a something to compare what's going to happen today, and I have no idea what's going to happen. This is what happened back in September of 2019 when I called the Vera Hotel.
And I just want to talk to an average person to see what they think. I have no idea, obviously, who's going to...
Hey there.
Hello?
Oops. Hello?
Hi, is this the Vera?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're breaking up, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Nicole. I'm calling from the United States. I do a radio show, and we're covering the elections over there, and I was just curious to know what you might think about what's going on. Is it going to be Netanyahu? Is he going to be out? Are you happy about that? What's happening over there?
Well, Tel Aviv hopes he's going to be out.
Yeah, the United States hopes he's going to be out, too. So do you?
Yeah. I'm so happy to hear.
Oh my goodness! We can't stand Donald Trump over here. I'm so sorry that we foisted him on the rest of the world. It was
okay. So it went like that. You get the idea. The person who answered the phone at the Vera Hotel in Tel Aviv, Israel, hoped that this meant the end of Netanyahu. Well, we know even though he's under indictment, criminal indictment, Netanyahu still somehow has remained in power until they did this other election yesterday. It's the fourth one in 2 years, right? And Bibi now is saying, we can't have a fifth election. We need to form a government. Well, nobody else wants to form a government with him. So I figured what we'd do is let's call the Hotel Vera again, because we can. So let's see. It's country code 972, then 3, then 778, and and let's see what happens. I have no idea what's going to happen. That's the beautiful thing about doing these calls is I never know what's going to happen. one ringy dingy. We're calling Tel Aviv, Israel, the Hotel Vera, which is the number one hotel on TripAdvisor in Tel Aviv, in case you were wondering. Okay. I hope they, I think it's like 7 hours difference there. So it's late. It's like late at night there. I hope they answer. Otherwise, this is wasted time. Let me tell you what's coming up in the show. Jack Rice is going to check in with us again because he's in Minneapolis. He's a defense attorney. And the jury has been seated in the murder trial of the former cop who killed George Floyd. All right. For some reason, this number is not answering. I do have another number. All right. Let's try the other number just because, you know, that one didn't go through. So let's try it again. Still calling Tel Aviv, Israel, the Hotel Vera. So the other number is Oh, damn it. All right. Israel 972. Then it goes that and then 94. All right, let's see if this one works. If not, we just wasted a couple of minutes, and that's okay. Okay, hello? Oh, there it is. One ringy dingy, two ringy dingy. I hope they answer. You know, I guess if it is like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning over there, I can't imagine a hotel, though, would close its front desk. Well, this might be just a bust of a segment. The last time we did this, I was on earlier in the day, so we weren't calling over there in the middle of the night. It's 11:16 in Tel Aviv. Okay, then somebody should be awake. They should answer the phone, right? This is the Hotel Vera. This is the top-rated hotel in Tel Aviv. The Vera Hotel. All right, I'm gonna try it one more time. Sorry, and if it doesn't work, oh, then I owe you one. Like, I owe you big time because this is not exactly great radio. This is why oftentimes, just to give you some, you know, inside info, when radio people do a bit like this, they'll do it like during, as a record is playing off the air, and they record it so that you know, they don't go through this where they call and call and nobody answers. It's so that, you know, you don't run into these problems. But, oh, that, why didn't it go through that? 3778. Oh, I see. 38. I need another zero on there. Okay. All right. Let's see if this works. This is our last try. We'll see if it works. If it doesn't, maybe I'll call a different hotel because I'm a glutton for punishment, right? We're going to give it a couple. I really wanted the Vera because this hotel looks so good and they were so great last time. Yeah. Damn it. All right. Well, the next one on the list is the Drisco Hotel in Tel Aviv. I guess I can try to call them. Oh, well, Vera, you've let me down. For the first time ever, you've let me down. Oh, this one doesn't have a phone number. Okay. All right. Well, let me find a different one. Royal Beach, Tel Aviv. Is there a phone number there? Damn it. None of these have phone. All right. I guess this bit is not working. I should just play for you back the rest of the call from last time because it was quite good. I feel bad now. It's like, oh, what a letdown. We were going to do something really fun here. All right, let's just see if any of these have a phone number. If I can pull up any of the, here's a phone number. Okay, this is the Savoy Tel Aviv Seaside. We'll try one more. All right, so, oh, no, that's, hold on, that's calling that number back again. Let's do, I know, it's just great radio, isn't it? But when the calls come together, they're really fun. So, all right, let's just try this one last one. So 9 3 7 4 1 2 and let's see if we get an answer at the Savoy Tel Aviv Seaside. Again, when it works, it's really fun because you never know what you're gonna get. And again, if they don't answer, then I owe you big time. Jack Wright. Oh, hello. Hi. Do you speak English?
Hello. Yes.
Hi, my name's Nicole. I'm calling from the United States. I do a radio show, and I was looking at the results of the elections over there, and it looks like Netanyahu again didn't get enough votes to form a government. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'm just calling a hotel.
I know. You know why I'm calling the hotel in Tel Aviv? Because I know that people who work in hotels usually speak English. So that I wanted to get somebody, just a random person in Israel, who would talk to me about it. Because I'm over here in the United States. We got rid of Donald Trump this year, which is a really good thing. And I'm really hoping Israel can get rid of Benjamin Netanyahu. Is that something you would like?
Listen, I don't really, mind. I'm just looking for peace and love and.
I hear you.
I just want the world to get better and.
Yes.
It doesn't matter which government or which person. We just need to be good to each other and.
What a concept, right? What a concept that would be. Hey, let me ask you this then. I just got my second vaccine for the COVID. I hear Israel's doing a really good job of vaccinating its citizens. Have you gotten the shot yet?
No, I got ill from Corona.
Oh no, you got ill from Corona. How long have you been better? Are you better?
1 month.
1 month. Oh, boy. You know what they're saying, though? If you get the vaccine, like people who've had it and then get the vaccine seem to be doing better. Like it helps get rid of some of the lingering symptoms. Do you have any symptoms left? Do you still have some lingering effects?
Just tired every time. I'm tired.
Wow. So are they telling you that you shouldn't get the vaccine because you had the disease? Because you had the virus?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for now.
I see. Okay. Well, are things opening back up there, though? Everything is getting sort of back to normal? Most people there have been vaccinated, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
There is even tourists from United States.
Really? Oh, wow. So it's been a while, though. So things are just starting to pick up again?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you talking to us for now. Yeah, let's hope everybody. Do you wear masks? Yeah. Do people in Israel wear masks out in public?
Yeah.
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 Okay. And you think it helps?
I think it helps. But some people don't wear.
Yeah.
But it's everywhere in all over the world.
Yeah, that it is. Well, hopefully we'll be on the other side of this soon enough. I hope you get your vaccine soon because apparently maybe it should help with the fatigue that you're still feeling. I thank you for answering the phone and talking to us. I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I know some people get weird talking politics. I'll just speak for myself and a lot of people over here in the U.S. We think it's time for Israel to move past that Benjamin Netanyahu.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, it's nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
To you too. You're welcome to Israel if you want.
Well, thank you. One of these days, I hope to get there. I really do.
It's very beautiful.
That's what I hear. And I'm looking at the pictures of your hotel. It looks wonderful. You're right on the water, huh? It looks really pretty.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of attractions in Israel, like Metzada, Detzi, Haifa, and just think about it in the summer. It's a great time to come to Israel. It's
absolutely.
Summer,
well, like let me ask you this, because I'm Jewish and I have a daughter who's 21, and I know that they do the birthright trips over to Israel. Is that something you think I should send her on?
It's called Taglit.
It's what?
It's called Taglit.
Taglit. And you recommend that?
Yeah.
You think it would be a good thing for her to do? My daughter's 21.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll work towards that then. Thank you for talking to me. I really appreciate it. And stay well.
You're welcome.
And good luck with this election.
Have a nice morning, evening. I don't know what time
there. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon here, so I know it's much later there. So you have a good night. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Have a nice evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. So that was, it wasn't quite the woman that I got last time at the Vera Hotel, but that's what you get at the Savoy Tel Aviv Seaside. So that's interesting. He was told that no, because he had the COVID, that he is not eligible to get the vaccine right now. And Israel has vaccinated, you know, the majority of their population so far. That's interesting. Okay, so let's see. Other stuff that I wanted to talk about. I told you, this is the midweek mess. We've got a little bit of everything. We will speak with Jack Rice in a little bit. They seated the jury in the murder trial for the cop, ex-cop, who killed George Floyd. So we'll talk to him. Oh, I know. Couple of other things. Ay, ay, ay. Today is Equal Pay Day. Yeah. Do you know what Equal Pay Day means? It means that you take a man and a woman who work the same job, same experience, same capabilities, same responsibilities in their position. The man worked throughout, and pretend COVID didn't exist. I'm just using this as sort of a, you know, an example in non-COVID times, because COVID throws everything out of whack. So the man worked, say, you know, a 40-hour week all year long in 2020, January through December. And he earned, let's just throw out a nice, easy round number, $60,000. The woman, with the same qualifications, same experience, doing the same job on a, you know, average, we're like averaging out the nation, that woman would have had to work until today to earn the same $60,000 that the man, and I hate using the word earned, because frankly, the woman earned the same amount the man did. She just didn't get it. She earned it. She just wasn't rewarded for the fruits of her labor. I've been there. You know, hey, I work in radio, or I did. I'll tell you a job I had here in Miami, working for then Clear Channel, now iHeartRadio. You know them, iHeartRadio. I produced a morning show at the then Progressive Talk Station here in South Florida with Jim DeFede, who people in South Florida knows. He was a newspaper guy. He worked for the Miami Herald. Now he's over at Channel 4, the CBS-owned station in South Florida, and he's a great reporter. Well, WINZ hired him to do mornings. And at the time, I was out of radio. I was so soured on it. But I heard Jim was, you know, going to take over mornings, and I called the station. I had a dialogue with the program director. And I said, well, Jim's great, but you need somebody who knows radio. So long story short, they hired me as his producer. A year goes by. You know, and I was his low-paid producer. He made a lot of money. I didn't. At the year ends, they didn't renew his contract. And they just sort of slid me into the host seat. They did not give me a producer. So I was the host. I was the producer. Jim DeFede was making $90,000 a year hosting the show. When I was host and producer, they gave me a big old raise from the $35,000 I was making as producer to, I think they raised me to $45,000, maybe. Might have only been $40,000 at first. But so they gave me a small raise. I got to host the show, produce the show, be chief cook and bottle washer. And for that, they paid me half of what they paid him. I could have complained, I'm sure. I could have made an issue of it. And then I would have been out of a job. That's what Equal Pay Day is all about. Welcome to it. Yeah, aren't you proud to be an American? I'm not. And with that, let's change gears again. It is the midday mess. And I told you my old friend Jack Rice was going to be here. And sure enough, I got to find him. Here we go. Is that's Jack's thing. Jack, I can bring up your audio while I get your and I've got your picture here too. It's actually a picture of you while I get you I get the video shot in there. Yeah, you see that? Where are you there? Like in Iraq or something?
I think I was just outside of Kabul. Oh, so I was in Afghanistan.
Wow, because you are a world traveler. So Jack Rice has been a CIA officer, a foreign correspondent, a talk show host. He is currently in his element as a defense attorney in Minneapolis. you're a jack of all trades, Jack.
Well, you know how life is sometimes. You do the things that you do. I mean, I'm actually a former prosecutor. I've been a criminal defense attorney for a lot of years. And I guess I'm a board certified criminal law specialist. I've actually taught trial advocacy work and taught lawyers across the United States and across the world. So I was in Kenya right before the pandemic hit. I've been teaching online in Tanzania. I've taught in Russia, Republic of Georgia, Thailand, Uganda, South Sudan. I mean, it's just part of what I do.
Wow.
So, yeah. And of course, I happen to live in Minneapolis. In fact, I live 10 blocks from where George Floyd died in the street. And so this is a case that has sort of had a massive impact upon this city and a massive impact upon, I think, anybody who lives here, let alone the fact that it's sort of had an impact across the world.
Everyone who saw that video, it had an impact on, as it should. Because that should not be happening, right? And so we saw a man get killed. We saw somebody who was supposed to be protecting that man instead use his power, abuse his power to murder this man. Again, the reason why I would not be on the jury, because I said he murdered him. Right.
Well, you know, I mean, that's exactly why we're having that jury trial. And in fact, it started about 2.5 weeks ago, if you will. And when I say started, I mean, this process has been going on since sometime after May 25th, when ultimately Derek Chauvin was arrested. But realistically, they started picking a jury in this case 2 weeks from last Monday. And in fact, what they have done between that point and this was they have picked that 12-person jury plus three alternates. Mm-hmm. They're getting prepared to try that case. That case is going to start. The opening statements are going to begin
Monday,
starting this next Monday. And it's very pressure filled. There are 1,100 law enforcement officers around, not just the buildings where they're trying this case, but the surrounding area out of concern of what might happen. There are 2,000 Minnesota National Guard that are prepared to move in as well. And so this has been a very big deal. And everybody knows, in light of what happened last summer, that what might happen now, and that it's important to make sure that you're prepared for what that might mean.
Absolutely. So the jury selection, the seating of the voir dire happened. There were some kinks in the armor there. There were some problems. One of the first things that popped up was that the city announced this $27 million settlement with George Floyd's family right in the middle of jury selection. My thought was, okay, make the settlement with them, but put in the deal that it is not to be announced until the trial is over. Wouldn't that have made more sense?
No, absolutely it would, Nicole. This was idiocy in the first place. When you look at what the city council did, they ultimately agreed with the George Floyd family, paid out $27 million, which, by the way, is a record settlement in Minnesota, the highest we have ever seen here. The problem that comes out of it is this, and you just alluded to exactly that. What you have now is an acknowledgement of fault. An acknowledgement of responsibility. And more importantly, because we were in the middle of jury selection, what happens is these people aren't sequestered. So in other words, they're not put in a hotel and they're not being excluded from the media. They're told not to read papers or watch TV. But
right.
The problem that comes with that is that nobody technically knows who they are. And so as a result, if you just walk up to your neighbor and say, hey, do you hear about what was going on with Minneapolis? That might be one of the jurors.
Right.
And so as a result, in fact, that's exactly what happened in this case. They brought everything to a standstill. And then ultimately, they brought all of those jurors. At that point, I believe there were seven.
Right. There were seven.
Two of those seven were actually removed because of this. I mean, the idiocy of it. It's interesting because what the judge said subsequently is he said, it's not a question of if this cuts for the prosecution or whether it cuts for the defense. What matters is that it cuts. And that's the truth. And
right.
So they could have just said, we're going to make this agreement, but what we're going to do is we're not going to disclose this agreement
until
the time. They
right.
didn't do that.
Right. Which just, I mean, look, I'm a layperson. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio. I never even aspired to be one. But It just makes common sense. How do they announce this huge settlement with the family while a jury is being selected for the murder trial? I just don't get it.
Yeah, you know, and you and I talked a bit about this, but actually, I think it's worse than that, because, in fact, one of the problems is it does impact due process in this case. And if we want to believe in this country that the United States has the best criminal justice system on the planet, And when you look at other parts of the world, I can tell you that by comparison, it can be quite extraordinary. But the problem, when you do something like this, it undercuts the credibility of that system itself. That's a problem. Yeah. But the other part is this, is if you think about it and you realize that if they had held off on this and not disclosed this, in the event that Chauvin walks, and I'm not suggesting one way or the other, but if he did, at least then you could drop that and say, hey, $27 million goes to the family. Everybody calm down. That's out the window. What happens if he's prosecuted and convicted, but it's not as much as people want, or it's too much for some people, and then people are in the streets for that reason? You could then say at least, well, you know what? We have a settlement in place. That's good. Everybody calm down. They lost the opportunity at all levels. They messed up the trial in the middle of it, and everybody sits around and says, oh, wow, great decision. Idiocy is what that was.
So who, I mean, I like to place blame where it's due.
Oh,
or credit.
Some blame.
Or credit.
I'm not afraid.
Who is responsible for this?
Here's who's responsible. The mayor is responsible.
Okay.
He is responsible. The city council, all of the members of the city council who voted for this, they're responsible. The Minneapolis city attorney, who actually penned an op-ed subsequently saying, oh, we had to take an opportunity to pay this out because if they had waited until the trial was over, then the number would have been higher. Now,
how do they know
argument.
That? Right.
But— By the way, I will go there. Idiocy.
Yes.
The problem is that understand, this is the highest settlement that has ever been paid out in the history of the state of Minnesota. And in fact, the way they usually do this, and this has nothing as to the quality of the person that George Floyd is, but the way they usually do this, when somebody runs over somebody in the street, when somebody kills somebody for whatever reason, what they do is they bring in actuarial tables and they say, all right, how much money does that person make a year? They multiply by what they lost. They can then look at the pain and suffering piece and say, okay, how much is that worth? Is that two times? Is that four times? They add that piece, and then they add punitive damages if they actually go that far. Well, in this case, there is no way to get to the number that they actually chose anyway. So it's historical in terms of the settlement, and it's at the worst possible time. It's like, is there anything else you can do to screw this up?
Right. Just idiotic. So that happened. So they finished selecting the jury. Now, did I read that they had three alternates and they're going to let one go?
Okay. Well, this is what's really going on here. Okay. In fact, the judge wanted four alternates.
Which makes more sense.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. It does make more sense. But what happened was the court administrator in this case, because of COVID, has said because of concerns for the pandemic, we want to limit this number down. And so, in fact, what they have done is the judge pushed to get this third alternate in place. So, in fact, what they're really doing is they're giving them two alternates that are going to last this entire trial, which is, by the way, insane in my book as well. And I know it is in the judges too, because I can tell you, I have tried a lot of cases in this state, a lot of them. And in those cases, what happens, you have to pick 12 jurors for a felony. Then you always have at least one, but always actually, you always have two alternates or more. And the purpose of alternates is that if for whatever reason, somebody doesn't show up, somebody gets sick, dare I say it, somebody gets COVID, somebody gets arrested, somebody goes to the press and says something stupid.
Yep.
Who knows what the reasons are? But if for whatever reason a person is removed from the jury, okay, we remove juror number 11. Fine, there's an alternate.
Right.
We remove juror number 7. Okay, there's an alternate. We remove juror number 4.
Uh-oh.
We have a mistrial.
That's
and we
right.
start over.
Ugh. So they have three alternates, and now they're going to get rid of one of them? That
yes.
I mean, that's just asinine. We've used that word
on,
a few times.
Tell me what you really
today.
Think, Nicole. Come on. Tell me what you really think.
Yeah. I just don't get it. It's like they're setting themselves up for failure.
Well, the real purpose of having alternates like this is to make sure that you have enough. And as in the past, you and I have discussed in the OJ case, you go back and you realize they had a dozen alternates and they used almost every single one of them. The logic behind a case like this is that these people are going to be sequestered. They're going to be put in a hotel someplace and fed terrible meals for a month or however long this case takes.
Right.
You never know how long this is going to take because there's going to be a lot of forensic testimony about this. There are multiple medical examinations that were done in this particular case. There's a ton of expert testimony that's going to happen. And if there's motions that happen in the middle of this to suppress evidence, to exclude evidence or anything else, those people are still on the hook waiting for something to happen, still sitting in hotels, still eating bad food, and we're hoping that they all show up.
Yeah, right. And not do something stupid and not talk to the press or not, you know, there are so many reasons a juror can get kicked off a jury. It's not that difficult should somebody want out, right?
Yeah, misbehavior even amongst the jurors themselves. And again, I think about this in terms of the pretrial orders that are made to these jurors. So I think about it in cases that I've had where specifically I may run into those jurors in a hallway, in an elevator, something else. I can't say anything to them. And so you all stand in an elevator together listening to bad music and trying not to stare at one another. And everybody's sort of laughing out of the corner of their mouths because we all know we can't. But at the same time, they're not supposed to discuss the case amongst themselves.
Right.
And so what happens when you're bored and you can only watch so many episodes of Game of Thrones and all of a sudden you realize that you're talking to your neighbors about something and those neighbors are also jurors? That's two right there.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, what's left then?
Oy. So what happens between yesterday and Monday? Are there motions being made or is everyone just home and preparing for starting on Monday?
A wonderful question. At this point, what the judge did was the judge sent everybody home. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what they did is as they were picking jurors, they said, everybody go home. But what will happen is when they show up on Monday, they better bring their toothbrush.
Oh, okay.
So they know that's what's going to happen. What we also know is that at this point, there are no scheduled motions in this case. However, and this is something that I've been thinking about, there are three charges in this case. We know that Derek Chauvin is being charged with second-degree unintentional murder. Mm-hmm. We also know that he's being charged with manslaughter.
Right.
In addition, he's being charged with something called third-degree murder.
Right, they brought that back in, right? That had been dropped, and now they brought it back.
They brought that back in. It actually went to the Court of Appeals. It came down. That was charged originally. Mm-hmm. It got pushed back out. In fact, there was a previous police officer, Muhammad Noor, who was charged with killing somebody back in 2019. And in fact, he was found guilty of that charge. And that was the case that was actually up at the Court of Appeals. And so that case is now pending before the Supreme Court. Here's the weird part. The thing is that the third degree charge is kind of a weird charge. Because the way it really works is this. It really says that if you're shooting into a crowd of people and you're trying to kill this one person and you kill somebody else by mistake, then you could be found guilty of third degree murder. The problem is that if you're trying to kill somebody and you kill somebody else and they says you kills others or inadvertently, right? It happens that way. Mm-hmm. The problem is there was no other person here. It's not like Derek Chauvin was out there trying to kill somebody else.
Right.
And so it's a very confusing thing. And if you can make an argument, and I think the defense is sitting here contemplating this right now, if they can make an argument to themselves, and they very well may here, that, you know what, this third degree charge is confusing, constitutionally vague is the language you would use. Therefore, they would ask that charge be dismissed as constitutionally vague. Now, the thing is we know that the judge himself is the one who kicked that third degree charge in the first place. He doesn't like it. So there is a possibility here on the very back end of this thing that the defense could very well make that motion now, get that charge dumped. And what it does is it first of all, avoids one potential charge, but it also sort of undercuts the prosecution, who's now prepared for three different charges.
Right.
And all of a sudden, one of those charges is gone. So we're going to see.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it'll be interesting no matter. So it starts on Monday with, you know, my knowledge of a courtroom is from watching, of course, Law and Order and such shows. You know, Boston Legal, The Practice, L.A. Law. So does it start with opening statements from both the defense and the prosecution?
It sure does. So here's the layout in Minnesota. And by the way, for people who haven't seen any of this, this is live. So you can watch this entire thing.
It is streaming live video. Videos in the courtroom. Cameras
right,
in the courtroom.
Exactly. As they put it, gavel to gavel. But this is really unique because they don't do this. Not in Minnesota. They do not air trials at all. And in fact, all they've ever done in the past is they've done a few sentencings as a pilot project. I had a sentencing on a big case a couple of years ago, and I was one of the first, and there were only a couple of handful tops where they actually sentenced these and they brought in cameras. So they don't do it. This is unique in itself.
Wow.
So the way it works in Minnesota is there's going to be openings first, prosecution, then defense. The defense can actually defer and wait to do their opening until after the prosecution finishes their case.
Really?
It's a bad idea.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I mean, technically, the logic is that what you could do is wait and see what it is the prosecution does and says before you actually lay something out. But I think in a case like this, it's critical that you, besides, obviously, when you're picking that jury, you're also wanting to connect with that jury and say, there's a bunch of things, jurors, that you need to think about. There's
right.
a bunch of things that are going to be coming in this case. And in fact, when this witness gets called, when that witness gets called, I want you to think about this and this and this and this. This is about teeing up your case before you start your case.
Sure. And to give them some seeds of doubt to process what they're hearing while the defense is putting on their, or the prosecution is putting on their case.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what will happen. So they do those two, and then the state will put on their case. So in other words, they will call all their witnesses one after the other. And at that time, what will happen is as they will do a direct examination of whomever they want to put on. Then the defense gets to do a cross examination mm-hmm. and they finish their case at that point. And what will happen is they will rest.
Right.
Once that happens, by the way, we're speeding this up because this is going to take weeks.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm putting my numbers on in maybe 3 weeks.
Okay. Just for the prosecution or for the whole trial? Just for
the prosecution
to lay out their case. Wow.
Yeah. The prosecution is going to take longer than the defense in this case.
Wow.
I mean, they really are. You're going to see the defense putting on probably a couple of witnesses, specifically witnesses dealing with police behavior, police techniques, the application of those techniques and why. You're going to see probably more information when it comes to medical exams, mm-hmm. causes of death, a whole bunch of things. But they have many fewer witnesses, maybe some character witnesses of Derek Chauvin. And ultimately, the question will be if Derek Chauvin himself testifies. So once they finish, there could be some rebuttal witnesses both ways. Once they're done, then what will happen in Minnesota is the prosecution will do their closing argument. The defense will do their closing argument. And here's the twist in this state, which is kind of strange, is the defense, the prosecution gets to do a rebuttal on the defense.
Huh.
So in other words, they can come in to argue certain things. Now, this has happened to me before, so it frustrates me when I'm sitting in the middle, is you can get bookended.
So they get the last word. Wow. So the prosecutor
exactly.
has an advantage here because
they absolutely do on this issue. And I think that's one of the reasons that they have to really fight really hard here, maybe that too, to make sure that they don't get bookended too much and that they limit what that rebuttal testimony could be. By the way, there is one last weird piece that has a precedent in Minnesota that I'm not aware of in any other part of the country. It's something called Spark of Life.
Okay.
Spark of Life is unique to Minnesota that I'm aware of. And it's happened to me in murder trials. So what Spark of Life is you can put on all of your witnesses as a prosecution. The last witness you put on is somebody you can put on to talk about the person who died, to talk about their life. So you can literally say, when my son was a little boy, my little son wanted to be a cowboy. And I mean, literally, you can put all of this in. And the thing is that what's really frustrating about it is that you can sometimes slide in character evidence. And if you bring in character evidence as the prosecution, guess what gets to happen? The defense can literally say, so let me get this right. You're saying he's a great guy, but what about the reality that he was convicted of this and this?
They've opened the door, so they get to explore what they opened the door to.
Yeah, but while that may be true, here's your problem.
You don't get to come back in and question again. If they bring it up in the last rebuttal, you have no comeback.
Well, you can actually go after the prosecution in terms of that witness in terms of that. But understand, this could be the dead guy's mom.
Right.
This could be the dead guy's wife. This could be that
child.
Person's significant
other.
Could be
the little girl who said, my daddy changed the world.
You know what? And that is exactly the point. I have been in that position where I'm like, I had things I wanted to say and I wanted to climb up over the desk. And I look over and the jury is basically ready to plunge daggers into my chest. Mm-hmm. So there's limits to what you can do. But that is a part of what's going to happen in this case. There is a lot coming.
Oh, boy. It will be fascinating. It'll be interesting to see how much, you know, the media covers it. And without the sideshow of Trump, there's air in the room. You know, there's not one person sucking all the air out of every room and every newscast. And, you know, where there was too much going on that they couldn't even cover all the crap flying from his orange nonsense. So there is an opening. There is room. They're covering all kinds of inconsequential stuff. This one is probably going to be the circus that we expect. It'll be everywhere.
I think you're right. I should add, you know, you mentioned other things going on. You look at what happened in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You look at what happened in Boulder. And the thing is that what happens in the world can impact what happens inside of a courtroom too. So as a criminal defense attorney, one of the things that I could use if I were representing Derek Chauvin in this case is, you know what? The world is a dangerous place.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place for police officers, too. And in fact, police officers are targeted and police officers are murdered constantly, just like this officer in Boulder.
That's right.
You walk out into the street, you have no idea what's coming at you. That's what Derek Chauvin had to walk into at the time. Do you see how it cuts that direction?
Right. So they can say that. But I look at it as that, you know, George Floyd, did not have a gun and he wasn't threatening anybody. He allegedly passed a bad 20. So big difference between a crazy guy with an AR-15 walking into a grocery store and killing 10 people in cold blood. And this rogue cop putting his knee on the neck of a man who didn't do anything
Nicole,
until he's dead.
That's why you're not going to be one of my jurors.
That's why I'm not on the jury, of course. Oh, my God. So, Jack Rice, we've only got a few minutes left. I got my my second Moderna vaccine today. And
how are you feeling?
So far, just a sore arm and hopefully knocking on wood laminate. Hopefully that's all I get. I've heard horror stories from friends who have had reactions to the Moderna second shot. So I'm going at it with a positive attitude. I plan to be here tomorrow. You know, business as usual.
Yeah, you know, that's good. I had the Pfizer one about a week last week. And the thing is I had COVID in November.
Right.
And so I was concerned. I was on my back for like 2 weeks. I mean, I don't get sick ever. And, you know, I was sort of doing stupid guy stuff like, you know, I can take this. I've had people shoot at me. I got hit by an IED. I can take everything. Right.
Right.
And boy, I was wrapped up in a ball crying for my mommy.
Really? So it was bad. You had it bad, huh? Wow.
Yeah, it was not so good. But the thing is that I had heard that if you actually had COVID and then you get one of these vaccines, it may hit you. And I had it in that first couple of hours, even 5 or 6 hours, I'm sort of stomping around like, oh, no problem. And, you know, again, I fall back into the I can do this, I can do that. By that night, it's like all of a sudden I started getting cold. Then I started to shake a little bit. Then I started to sweat. And then I started getting, then I started spiking a fever. And it lasted about 36 hours. Not terrible.
That's what a friend told me that he had too.
Yeah, trust me. And my attitude is, I know what it feels like. And my COVID wasn't nothing, was nothing compared to some. But I can say that the fact that that I remember what it felt like to have that, I'll take this shot. And by the way, I have no hesitation about going to get the next one either.
Oh, so that was from your, that was your first one. So you should be getting your second one next week, I guess. So
yeah. I think that's about right. Yeah.
My husband had the Pfizer and he still has brain fog. I mean, but he feels the effects of an aspirin. He feels everything. He's very sensitive.
Are you making fun of him? Is that what you're
doing? Of course, always. No, he's,
good,
you know,
good. I'm glad you're not wasted.
No, don't
make it like it's a confusing thing. You want to be clear on this.
Of course. No, and I, on the other hand, have such a high tolerance that, for instance, if I take like an edible, I get no effects from it. You know, people trip on edibles of cannabis, and I don't feel it. So I usually don't react to stuff like this. He does. So hopefully, I won't have anything more than a sore arm, but I'll deal with whatever it is. I just got off the phone. I called before I brought you on. I called over to Israel. I do this from time to time. I'll call foreign countries to get their take on something that's happening. And Israel just had their election. And again, Netanyahu failed to get enough support to form a government. This is the fourth time in 2 years. So I did this the last time and spoke to some wonderful woman at a hotel who just hated him. And we had the best conversation. So I thought, well, let's try again. It didn't go as well this time. But I did speak to a lovely man at a different hotel who didn't want to get into politics. He just wants everyone to get along and love one another and have peace, which is a good sentiment. But then I asked him if he got the vaccine, and he said no, he had gotten COVID. And over there, they're not vaccinating people who actually got sick with the virus. Not yet, anyway.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow. I know the numbers of what they were doing were extraordinary. When you look at the percentage of people who actually have been vaccinated in Israel is incredible, although there have been some reports that some of the, as the Israelis put it, the Israeli Arabs, that's what they call them, rather than the Palestinians. Some of them have not been vaccinated. And that is also seeming to be true in Gaza and in the West Bank. But one thing I have learned, and I remember covering the war in Gaza and West Bank, and even when I was in places like Tel Aviv on the Israeli side, you know, as I was told there, it says you talk to five Jews and you're going to get 10 opinions. And it's like, yep, I understand it. You know, there's no such thing as an American opinion either. It's like, it depends upon who you ask.
No.
You know, somebody's either a genius or a lunatic or both.
And this clerk at the hotel was playing ambassador, saying, come on over and visit. We now have American tourists coming back. You should come visit. It's beautiful here. So, you know, he was doing his job, trying to book some rooms, I guess, at this lovely hotel.
Well, there you go. Sounds not like a bad idea. I have a passport. I have one shot. I'm getting close to two. And boy, I want to be on an airplane.
You're itching to go somewhere. So what do you do with your cases here when you're traveling?
Well, you know, I mean, that's the nice thing is I can control what I'm doing, you know, so I know what's coming at me. It's pretty strange, though, I have to tell you, because a lot of these cases have been on hold for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned, you know what it kind of looks like in the courtroom. The thing is that these courtrooms, this courtroom in particular,
very
looks
different.
Fundamentally different.
I've
than
seen
you may
pictures
have ever
of
seen
it,
before.
Right? Because of COVID, they're separating everybody and everything.
Well, the other part is that. You know, everybody knows what sort of the jury box looks like, right? It's sort of a big box and there's two rows of people. Normally, that's what you'll see. The box is gone in this case. They removed it completely. And what they have is they have all these chairs spread out like 6 feet apart. And so they're spread all the way across one of the entire walls of the courtroom. And in fact, there's no area for people to go and sit anymore.
Uh-huh.
Those have been removed as well. And there's only a couple of spaces for people to come and watch. So we have cameras in place and we have space for all of the teams, but otherwise this is much different. And I have to tell you, standing in front of juries, it's a much different experience.
Oh, I'll bet.
When you're trying to drive them to do things, or when you're trying to understand what somebody feels or thinks, and this issue of whether they can or can't wear a mask, is a massive deal. I'm getting ready to try a case here in just a couple of weeks, and I'm thinking about what it means where I'm going to be on top of everybody, at least in the sense of trying to make sure there aren't masks, trying to make sure that we can actually connect. And that's going to be a challenge because a lot of us have been hunkering down in our basements
yes.
for years.
Hello. Well, can you have a stipulation that everybody who sits on the jury gets vaccinated?
I think that'd be a great idea.
I think so too.
Because at least then we can all sit back and talk about it and say, okay, before we get started in jury selection, ladies and gentlemen, what I'd really like to do with you is let's talk about the last year for a minute.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Seriously, I want to know what your lives were like, what changed, what made you different, what made you the same or maybe more of the same. I actually want to know, maybe because I'm looking for ideas. I don't know. I feel like this has been so monumental for a lot of people that I want to just have those conversations because I don't know if people even know I don't talk to each other
yeah,
anymore.
I don't either. And I don't think we do. I think just being out in public, being around other people, this is going to take there's going to be a learning curve. It's going to be a whole new experience for so many people. It's been a year. We've been locked at home for a year. I was thrilled to get my second shot today. Now I'm counting the days. 2 weeks. 2 weeks I can go hug my kid. Like it's
tell me, were you this way too? I'm standing in line, you know, there's like six or seven or eight people in front of me and there's nurses walking around. And it was one of those things where for me, I was in a room with a lot of people and I'm not used to being in a room with a lot of people anymore. And I have to sort of recalibrate what that means.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all notice what it's like. You walk, if you have to go to the grocery store or any place else, if somebody even walks near you, you veer out on the sidewalk. You walk into the grass, you walk into the street. You know, we just push off from people who get close.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's just physical. I think that's even emotional and mental now too.
Yeah.
So for those of us who do what I do for a living, this is part of the struggle is to say, maybe we'll never be the same.
Right.
Maybe we'll never be able to come back exactly how we were, but how do we connect? How do we emote? How do we empathize with one another in a point when we've just shut ourselves down for a year? And of course, I think about that in the context of my 16-year-old daughter and what happens when you're a 10th grader and hard to think in context of your whole life when for them it probably feels like forever.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I'm glad my kid is done with school and so she's in a different place. It's still every age has its challenges. The fact is she moved out and I have not been able to really see her since she moved out. So I'm just counting the days. Now I got 2 weeks to go and but you know, when I go out I wear an N95 covered by another mask and a face shield. I have a husband who, because of, you know, I'm down most of my left lung, he does all the grocery shopping. He does everything. I really have not left this house except to go to the doctor in a year and walk the dog. That's it. So I'm looking forward to sort of slowly getting back into the world, but whatever that's going to look like. And I think it's going to look very different. So,
I think it is for a lot of people. I sort of hope, at least from me too, I hope that we can see it like, I'm getting ready to move, by the way, and maybe this is the analogy. I'm moving across town, not a big deal.
Gotcha.
But what I mean is that moving across town is sort of like when you go through and you go in your closet and say, where did all of this crap come from? And you start throwing this out and that out. And you're like, why do I have six of this thing? I don't even like it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start getting rid of all of these things in your life that you don't want. And I wonder if we're going to be able to do the same thing and say, yeah, I didn't really like this so much, or I didn't like that about myself, or I didn't like what I was doing with this. And I can recalibrate in the very same way that I guess I'm trying to do when I move into a different space, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I think we're all reexamining a lot of things. You know, some friends of, or I should say old friends of ours who we haven't been friendly with in a long time, we saw photos of a party that happened last weekend. And I was like, at first I looked, I thought maybe this was a memory from a year ago. And I brought it into Dave and I said, look what happened this weekend. Look at all the people who were there and not a mask in sight. I'm sorry, I don't want to be around those people. This is just
that was in Florida, wasn't it?
It's in Florida where it's allowed because we have a governor death sentence who, you know, I guess wants everyone to die. I don't know.
You know, I hate to say it. I mean, I feel like a lot of us have really tried to we've given up a lot. We've tried to do a lot in the last year, trying to help address this issue, but try to protect ourselves at the same problem.
Yeah.
You know, there's the part of you that wants to say, well, fine, let's just wall up Florida just on the northern border and say, good luck. You know, this is escape from Florida.
Yeah. Remember, don't. You know? Yeah. But then people like me get
on Texas, but not Florida. I get you. But I don't even want to say it about Florida, Texas, because they're good people everywhere. The problem is it's not the good people I'm concerned about. I mean, I'm concerned that they get sick. It's the crazies that I'm concerned about because of what they're willing to do and how they can have an impact far beyond themselves.
And I look at we're this close to being over the hump to like coming out on the other side, and these idiots are partying it up on South Beach. I'm just unbelievable. I just don't. And then these other idiots are partying it up. I'm sorry.
I feel the same way. You know, I was supposed to be teaching lawyers, prosecutors in Dar es Salaam, and they had to cancel it because of the pandemic. And so I've been doing some teaching online with these really extraordinary prosecutors, and they're great.
And but where is this? In Dar es Salaam? Where is that?
That's in Tanzania. Okay. That's the capital of Tanzania. And so I'm supposed to be in Tanzania, as they'll say it, in Tanzania. And I'm supposed to be there. And yet I'm not there, at least partially, because these yahoos down in Florida, down in these parties, all of Florida, not all of Texas. No. By the way, there are yahoos here in Minnesota,
too. Of course. They're everywhere. Right.
You can find the lunatics everywhere.
Yeah.
But all I know is I don't get to go to Tanzania because of them. And if I'm not going to Tanzania and I have to stay in my house, then they should have to stay in their houses.
Damn straight. Jack Rice, always right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that's it.
You
say
got it.
Like you mean it.
You got my vote on the jury.
I'm going to give you my daughter, my 16-year-old's phone number. You call her and tell her.
We should let her talk to Allison. You know, here's Allison's moving too. She just took another job, and I can't even help her look for an apartment and get moved in. I have 2 weeks. So this has been harder on me than anything else, not being able to deal with my kid, not being able to help her move, apartment hunt, you know, do anything. So that's been the worst part of it for me. So it's almost
over. I get you. By the way, their opening statements on the Chauvin trial are starting on Monday. They're going to be off to the races. This is going to be a very big deal.
All right. Real quick. We're so late anyway. We've run over. But in the chat room, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed a couple of people were going, oh, this Chauvin trial. Nobody cares. Do you think nobody cares? I have a feeling this is going to be everywhere. That this is going to be, I think everybody cares and everybody should care. Because if another cop gets off with murdering a black man who didn't do anything to deserve it, I really worry what comes next.
Well, I know when I've heard other people say that, and this is what I would say to them directly if I could, is that white police officers have been killing people of color for centuries.
Yep.
This is nothing new.
Right.
This is nothing new. The only difference now is there are a whole bunch of people who are walking around with HD cameras in their pockets.
That's right.
So now what we have are videos that are undeniable. The problem now is that if you have something that is undeniable and you still don't care, you are the problem.
And with that, that's a perfect note to end on. Jack Rice, find him at jackricelaw.com as the website. Find him on the Twitters at Jack Rice. He's on Facebook, everywhere. He'll be checking in with us throughout the trial because a lot of people do care. I care. And I'm coming to it from a very biased place. I want to see this guy fry. He needs to be held accountable for what he did. And hopefully this will stop other cops from doing the same kind of shit because it's got to stop. There you go.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Jack Rice. I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
All the best.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Jack Rice, everybody. And now you know why I love having him on the show. Or you already did anyway. All right, so I'm going to leave you. I may as well just leave you with what's news, because there is news that, again, I didn't get to today. So we'll do this, and I'll see you tomorrow. COVID vaccine, be good to me. Thanks, everyone.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Tuesday said Congress should tighten gun laws in the wake of the mass shooting in a Colorado supermarket that left 10 people dead, including a police officer who was the first to respond to reports of gunfire. Biden called for closing background check loopholes and banning high-capacity magazines and semi-automatic military-style guns like the one reportedly used in the Monday shooting. Boulder's city council had banned assault-style rifles, but a judge 6 days before the shooting ruled that they lacked the authority to do so. So the ban was overturned, and that's when the Boulder shooter bought the gun he used to murder 10 people.
The United States Senate, I hope some are listening, should immediately pass the two House passed bills that close loopholes in the background check system. These are bills that receive votes of both Republicans and Democrats in the House. This is not and should not be a partisan issue. This is an American issue. It will save lives, American lives. And we have to act. We should also ban assault weapons in the process.
That was President Joe Biden calling for a nationwide ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in his first remarks since a gunman armed with a military-style rifle and a semi-automatic pistol opened fire at a Boulder, Colorado supermarket. The Boulder attack came less than a week after a gunman killed 8 people at 3 spas in the Atlanta area. Well, we now know the identities of the 10 victims of Monday's shooting, and we know more about the shooter, too, whose name I will not use. We do know he was taken into custody after the shooting and faces 10 counts of murder. We still don't know his motive, though. The Denver Post reported that the 21-year-old was considered by friends to be violent and short-tempered in high school. Then why was he allowed to buy a gun? He was treated for a gunshot wound to the leg and, again, charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder. Just 2 weeks ago, the Democratic-led House of Representatives passed 2 bills that would expand background checks on all commercial gun sales. The worry is that, as with past pushes for gun reform, nothing will actually pass. And in case you were wondering, Senator Joe Manchin said he would not support universal background checks. Well, the hotspot on Capitol Hill Wednesday will be in the Senate Rules Committee, where they're taking up the For the People Act. That's the voting rights and election overhaul proposal. What happens with this bill will affect the future of the Senate. So both Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell will be there, though leaders rarely attend committee hearings. But the stakes are high. The For the People Act would expand voter registration and make it easier to vote by mail or vote early. Independent redistricting commissions would take politics and politicians out of the business of redrawing congressional districts. Super PACs would be forced to disclose big donors, and new limits would be placed on their ability to coordinate with campaigns. A public financing system would be created for House candidates who focus on small dollar donations. The Federal Elections Commission would be shaken up. New ethics requirements would be imposed on the Supreme Court and Congress. Presidential and vice presidential candidates would be required to disclose their tax returns. All necessary reforms. The bill is reported to be supported by every Democrat in the Senate except for Joe Manchin. The House passed its version on a party line vote 2 weeks ago. And the Democrats say passing this bill is critical as Republicans in dozens of states are rushing to enact stricter voting requirements. The former guy and his Republican allies claimed there was widespread voter fraud that cost him the White House in November, but no proof of that ever emerged, and they lost more than 60 court challenges to the election results. Enough already. The jury has been seated in the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for the death of George Floyd, the unarmed black man who died in custody after Chauvin pressed a knee into his neck for nearly 9 minutes. The jury selection process took 11 days. Opening arguments are set to begin on Monday. The jury includes three black men, one black woman, two mixed-race women, and nine white jurors. Defense attorneys unsuccessfully tried to delay and move the trial after the city agreed to pay a record $27 million to Floyd's family to settle their wrongful death lawsuit. The House of Representatives on Monday held its first hearing on D.C. statehood, but the Senate is where the real battle will reside. John Ossoff, senator from Georgia, on Tuesday added his name to the list of 43 other senators endorsing the idea. Well, Tuesday marked the 11th anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. President Biden, who famously remarked that it was a big effing deal, used the occasion to announce that the special enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act will be extended until August 15th. This change will allow Americans who lost their insurance along with their jobs to the pandemic to get coverage. Meanwhile, more of Joe Biden's cabinet nominees have been confirmed. Dr. Vivek Murthy was confirmed as U.S. Surgeon General, a role he held before in the Obama administration. Shalonda Young was confirmed as the Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Two Asian American senators, Tammy Duckworth and Mazie Hirono, had raised issues about the lack of Asian American representation on Biden's team. But they've backed down off threats to oppose certain nominees after the White House agreed to add a senior level Asian American Pacific Islander liaison. North Korea conducted its first weapons test since Biden took office, launching two projectiles last weekend. The test had been widely expected, and officials have downplayed the event as falling, quote, on the low end of the spectrum of provocative actions the regime could carry out. The projectiles were reportedly not ballistic missiles, a designation that the administration says does not qualify as a serious breach. Just something to be aware of. Well, the fourth time should tell you something, no? Israeli parliamentary elections on Tuesday resulted in another deadlock for the fourth time in the past 2 years. The exit polls on Israel's three main television stations indicated that both Netanyahu and his religious and nationalist allies, along with a group of anti-Netanyahu parties, all fell short of the parliamentary majority required to form a new government. That raised the possibility of yet another unprecedented fifth consecutive election later this year. This vote was seen as a referendum on Netanyahu, and the initial results showed that the country remains as deeply divided as ever, with a number of small sectarian parties dominating the parliament. Sadly, the results also showed a continuing shift of the Israeli electorate toward the right, which supports West Bank settlements and opposes concessions and peace talks with Palestinians. Speaking to supporters early Wednesday, Netanyahu claimed a great achievement, but didn't declare victory. Instead, he appeared to reach out to his opponents and called for formation of a, quote, stable government that would avoid another election. He said, "We must not under any circumstances drag the state of Israel to new elections, to a fifth election. We must form a stable government now." Yeah, how about one that doesn't include him? So, Wednesday, March 24th is Equal Pay Day. This is how long, how far into the new year women must work to earn what men earned in the previous year. Got it? And now, it'll take more of your hard-earned cash to get your mail delivered more slowly? Postmaster General Louis DeJoy announced plans to slow down mail delivery standards and cut hours at some post office locations as part of his 10-year strategy to stabilize the agency. Oh, the plan raises what we pay for postage, too. Of course it does. DeJoy has been obviously mired in controversy since taking over the agency last June. Since the members of the Postal Board are the only ones who can remove the Postmaster General, my suggestion is get those three new members who Joe Biden nominated on the board up to speed and get rid of DeJoy as soon as possible. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.